Hi, and welcome to Creepify. Each week we will dive into anything and everything that is, well, creepy. These stories will be a spine chiller, something that will make you think and maybe hide under the covers. Don't be surprised if some episodes make the little hair stand up, and you feel someone might be watching you. Now, with your nerves on edge and attention grabbed, I'm Brandon Smith, and this is Creepify.
Your official diagnosis is schizophrenic psychosis, is that correct?
For the time being, yes.
For the time being, how do you mean?
My illness does not really fit, in any medical definition.
Could you describe to us your illness and your symptoms?
I suffer from hallucinations. I see and feel and hear things that are not real.
Sorry, is that funny?
No.
What kind of medication are you getting?
Drugs. Antipsychotic drugs.
Do they help?
Yes.
So the medication makes the hallucinations go away?
No. But they help me decide what is real and not real. They help me understand that I don't have to obey and do everything they say.
When you say they, what exactly do you see?
Demons.
Even now? In here, as we speak?
Yes.
Where?
Right there, right behind you.
Right behind me. Does he say anything?
Yes.
What does he say?
He tells me to hurt you. He wants me to hit you. He wants me to you. I'm tired now. I want you to go.
Almost half of adults, 46.4%, will experience a mental illness during their lifetime. 5% of adults 18 or older will experience a mental illness in any 1 year, equivalent to about 43.8 million people. Of adults in the United States with any mental disorder in a 1 year period, 14.4% have one disorder, 5.8% have two disorders, and 6% have three or more. Half of all mental disorders begin by the age of 14, and three quarters by the age of 24. Only 41% of those people who have mental disorder in the past year have received professional health care or other services. For Catherine Knight, she very well may have fell into the statistics of a mental health disorder. She didn't just want her husband's hand in marriage, but instead she wanted more. Human flesh. Now, turn on your lights, check the doors, as we uncover the gruesome tale of a woman who is known as the female Hannibal Lecter. Catherine Knight was born and raised in an unconventional and dysfunctional family environment. Her mother, Barbara, had been married to Jack and lived with him in a small town of Aberdeen in New South Wales, Hunter Valley. Barbara and Jack had four sons before Barbara began an adulterous relationship with Ken Knight, a friend and co-worker of her husband. The Ruffin and Knight families were well known in their conservative rural town, and the affair caused a major scandal. Local backlash forced Barbara and Ken to leave Aberdeen and move to Moree. None of her four sons went with her. Two older boys continued to reside with their father, while the two younger sons were sent to be raised by an aunt in Sydney. Barbara had four additional children with Ken Knight, including a pair of twins, born in 1955 in Tenterfield. Catherine Knight was the younger of these twin daughters. In 1959, when Knight was four, Jack Ruffin died, and his two boys who had been living with him moved in with Barbara and Ken. Knight's father was an alcoholic who openly used violence and intimidation to rape his wife Barbara up to 10 times a day. Barbara, in turn, often told her daughter's intimate details and how much she hated it and men. Part of an act she did not want to perform, Barbara told her to put up with it and stop complaining. Knight claims that she was frequently assaulted by several members of her family, which continued until she was 11. Although they have minor doubts about the details, psychiatrists accept her claim as her family members confirmed the events did happen. Barbara's great-grandmother, an Australian from the Moree area, who had been married to an Irishman, Barbara was proud of this fact and liked to think of her own family. Barbara was proud of this fact and liked to think of her own family as Aboriginal. This was a family kept secret, and there was considerable racism in the area at the time, and this was a source of tension for the children. Apart from her twin sister, the only person whom Knight was close to was her uncle, Oscar Knight, who was a champion horseman. She was devastated when he committed suicide in 1969, and continues to maintain this ghost visits her. The family moved back to Aberdeen the same year. When she attended Muss Wellbrook High School, Knight became a longer and remembered by classmates as a bully who stood over small children. She assaulted at least one boy at school with a weapon and was once injured by a teacher who was subsequently found to have acted in self-defense. By contrast, when not in rage, Knight was a model student and often earned awards in her good behavior. Upon leaving school at 15 years of age, without having ever learned to read or write, she gained employment as a cutter in a clothing factory. 12 months later, she left to start what she referred to as her dream job. She was quickly promoted to boning and was given her first set of butcher knives at home. The knives were hung over her bed so that she would always be handy if I needed them, a habit she continued until her incarceration everywhere she lived. Knight first met hard-working drinking co-worker David Stanford Kellett in 1973. Kellett has previously worked for the railroads of Coffs Harbor. His best friend was killed in front of him in a shunting accident. He was later present when a train hit a school bus in Kempsey, killing six children in 1968. He helped rescue the injured and remove the bodies. His heavy drinking has been attributed to these incidents. He was transferred to Muss Wellbrook after causing several derailments due to falling asleep while shunting. His behavior deteriorated as he eventually lost his job, but he soon got to work at the nearby Aberdeen, where he became close friends with Knight's brother. After he began dating Knight, he also occasionally partnered her twin. Often, if Kellett got into a fight, Knight would step and back him up with her fists. In Aberdeen, she was well known for physically threatening anyone who upset her. Knight married Kellett in 1974. At her request, with a couple arriving at the service of her motorcycle with a very intoxicated Kellett on the pillion, as soon as they arrived, Knight's mother Barbara gave Kellett some advice. "The old girl said to me, watch out. You better watch this one, or she'll kill you. Stir up the wrong way, or do the wrong thing, and she'll kill you. Don't even think of playing up on her. She'll kill you." And that was her mother talking. She told me she's got something loose. She's got a screw loose somewhere. On their wedding night, night tried to strangle Khaled. She later explained it was because she fell asleep after intimacy of three different times. The marriage proved particularly violent, and on one occasion a heavily pregnant Knight burned all of Khaled's clothes and shoes before hitting him across the back of the head with a frying pan, simply because he arrived home late from a darts competition after reaching the finals. In fear for his life, Khaled fled before collapsing in a neighbor's house. He was later treated for a severely fractured skull. Police wanted to charge Knight, but she changed her behavior. Khaled and talked to him and dropping the charges. John Charles Thomas Price, born 4th of April 1955, was the father of three children when Knight had an affair with him. Liked by everyone who knew him, his own marriage has ended in 1988. While his two-year-old daughter had remained with his former wife, the two older children lived with him. Price was well aware of Knight's violent reputation as she moved into his house in 1995. His children liked her. He was making a lot of money working in the local mines. And apart from the violent arguments at first, life was a bunch of roses. In 1998, Knight and Price fought over his refusal to marry her. In retaliation, she videotaped items he had allegedly stolen from work and sent the tape to his boss. Although the items were out of date, medical kits, and that he had scavenged from the company rubbish tip, Price was fired from the job he had held for 17 years, as his boss had no choice. That same day, he kicked her out and she returned to her own home, while news of what she'd done spread throughout the town. A few months later, although he now refused to allow her to move in with him, the fighting became even more frequent and most of his friends would no longer have anything to do with him while they remained together. In February 2000, a series of assaults with Knight stabbing him in the chest. Finally fed up, he kicked her out of the house. On February 29th, he stopped at the Scone Magistrates Court on his way to work and took out the restraining order in an attempt to keep her away from both himself and his children. That afternoon, Price told his co-workers that if he did not come to work the next day, it would be because Knight had murdered him. Despite their pleas that Price not return home, he stated that he was afraid Knight would kill his children if he did not. Price arrived home to find that Knight, although not there herself, had sent the children away for a sleepover at a friend's house. He then spent the evening with his neighbors before returning home and going to bed at 11 p.m. Earlier that day, Knight had bought new black lingerie and had videotaped all of her children while making comments, which have since been interpreted as crude will. She later arrived at Price's house while she is sleeping and sat watching television a few minutes before having a shower. She then woke Price for intimate time, after which he fell asleep. At 6 a.m. the next day, the neighbors became concerned that Price's car was still in the driveway, and when he did not arrive at work, his employer sent a worker to see what was wrong. Both the neighbor and the worker tried knocking on Price's bedroom window to wake him up, but alerted police after noticing blood on the front door. Police arrived at 8 a.m. Breaking down the back door, police found Price's body with Knight strung on the ground from taking a large number of pills. She had stabbed Price with a butcher's knife while he was sleeping. According to the blood evidence, he awoke and tried to turn the light on before attempting to escape while Knight chased him through the house. He managed to open the front door to get outside, but either stumbled back inside or was dragged back into the hallway, where he finally died after bleeding out. Later, Knight went into Aberdeen, withdrew $1,000 from Price's account at an ATM. Price's autopsy revealed that he had been stabbed 37 times in both the front and the back of his body, with many of the wounds extending into vital organs. Several hours after Price had died, Knight skinned him, hung the skin from a meat hook at the door in the laundry room. She then cut off Price's head and cooked parts of his body, serving up the meat with baked potato, pumpkin, beetroot, zucchini, cabbage, yellow squash, and gravy in two settings at the dinner table, along with notes beside each plate, each having the name of one of Price's children on it. she was preparing to serve as body parts to his children. The third meal was thrown on the back lawn for unknown reasons. Speculated that Knight had attempted to eat, but could not. This has been put forward into support of her claim that she has no memory of the crime. Price's head was found in a pot with vegetables. The pot was still warm, estimated to be between 40 and 50 degrees Celsius, which is 104 and 122 degrees Fahrenheit, indicating that the cooking had taken place earlier that morning. An empty soft drink bottle with legs crossed. This was claimed in court to be an act of defilement, demonstrating Knight's contempt for Price. Knight had left a handwritten note on top of the photograph of Price, bloodstained and covered with small pieces of flesh, it read. Time got you back, Jonathan, for raping my daughter. You too, Beck, for Ross, for little John. Knight's initial offer to plead guilty to manslaughter was rejected. She was arraigned on March 2, 2001 on the charge of murdering Price, to which she entered a plea of not guilty. Her trial was initially fixed for July 23, 2001, but was adjourned due to her counsel's illness and was refixed for October 15, 2001. When the trial commenced, Justice Berry offered the 60 jury prospects the option of being excused by the nature of the photographic evidence, which 5 accepted. When the witness list was read out to the prospects, several more had dropped out over the jury was, even took place. Knight's attorneys then spoke to the judge, who adjourned to the following day. The next morning, Knight changed her plea to guilty, and the jury was dismissed. It was now made public that Justice O'Keefe had been advised of the plea change the day before. He adjourned the trial and then ordered a psychiatric assessment overnight to determine if Knight understood the consequences of a guilty plea and was fit to make such a plea. Knight's legal team had planned to defend Knight by claiming amnesia, although they did consider her sane. Two psychiatrists concluded that Knight suffered from borderline personality disorder. No reason has ever been given for the guilty plea, and despite in giving it, Knight still refused to accept responsibility for her actions. In the sentence hearing, Knight's lawyer requested that she excuse to avoid hearing some of the facts, but the application was refused. When Timothy Lyons took the stand and described the skinning and decapitation, Knight became hysterical and had to be sedated. On November 8th, Justice O'Keefe pointed out the nature of the crime and Knight's lack of remorse required a severe penalty. He sentenced her to life in prison, refused to fix a non-parole period, and ordered that her papers be marked never to be released. First time that this has ever been imposed on a woman in Australian history. In June 2006, Knight appealed the life sentence, claiming that a penalty of life in prison without possibility of parole was too severe for the killing. Justices Peter McLean, Michael Adams, and Megan Latham dismissed the appeal of New South Wales Court of Criminal Appeal in September, with Justice McLean writing his judgment, "This was an appalling crime, almost beyond contemplation in a civilized society." I hope you enjoyed this week on Creepify. I hope I struck a nerve or gave you that feeling as if you're glad it's daylight or you're freaked out because it's nightfall. If you have a creepy story you want me to tell as a segment in Creepify, then send me a DM on Twitter or a story you've heard of or experienced yourself, and I'll read it aloud in my episodes. Now, you can subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Podbean, or wherever else you listen to your podcast, all for free. Now, if you feel need to support my show, you can do so on my Patreon. Now, if you're waiting for my next episode to drop, feel free to check out my other podcast I host. It's called Loot News, L-E-W-T News, for an upbeat, kind of scary, social podcast. But until next episode, just remember to stay safe and watch out for the darkness.